All right, we'll see if that works. Okay. So we are continuing our study of the purpose of the husband-wife relationship. We got through most of the lesson last week. We're going to try and finish up today, and then we're going to move into the next lesson if we have time. So just as kind of a refresher, what was the main takeaway from the purpose of the husband-wife relationship, if you remember that long ago? Kelly? Companionship. Companionship. That is probably the single most important topic of the purpose of the husband-wife relationship. Man was alone, and God made a suitable helper. And again, we talked about the fact of helper isn't inferior. We looked at examples where helper, the Holy Spirit was the helper to the apostles. Was the Holy Spirit inferior? No. But woman was created to be the only answer to man's loneliness. Adam had all of these other creatures, yet he was lonely. And so God created Eve to solve the problem of man's loneliness. So we're going to pick up in a little bit of a weird spot, right? Because we talk about that, but actually where we ended up in the lesson, the next thing we're going to talk about is polygamy. Now, in 2021, do we need to talk about polygamy? Have you seen the show Sister Wives? It's on TV. It's becoming more and more acceptable to have multiple wives. So, the idea of polygamy, where did it come from? Look in Genesis chapter 4. Genesis chapter 4 and verse 17. And Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch. And he built a city and called the name of the city after the name of his son, Enoch. To Enoch was born Irad, and Irad begat Mehujael, and Mehujael begat Methushael, and Methushael begat Lamech. Then Lamech took for himself two wives. The name of one was Adah, the name of the second was Zillah. So this is where the first time we see the example of multiple wives. Was this God's plan? Was he okay with this?
It wasn't his plan. It's just simply telling you what happened.
He's just telling you what happened, right? Did he accept it under the old covenant? Kelly?
I would say that he did not accept it in the sense that he never approved of it. In the same way, like when Jesus taught on divorce, using a corollary here, he said, because of the hardness of your heart, God allowed.
Right. It was not the plan from the beginning, correct? If you look over in Genesis chapter 16 and verse 4, so he, that being Abraham, went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress became despised in her eyes. Then Sarah said to Adam, to Abram, my wrong be upon you. I gave my maid into your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, I became despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between you and me. So Abram said to Sarai, indeed your maid is in your hand. Do to her as you please. And when Sarai dealt harshly with her, she fled from her presence. So multiple wives led to what?
Problems.
Guys, most of us can admit one wife is enough, right?
More wives, more problems.
This was not God's plan. If you look over in Matthew chapter 19, starting in verse 4, and he answered and said to them, have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So then they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man separate. And then in verse 9, he says, "And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery, and whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery." So from the beginning, God's plan was one man, one woman. And if you would have asked me when I was a kid if you would even need to discuss polygamy, I would have thought, no. But it is actually making a comeback in our society. And with the way that our political environment is moving, I would anticipate that polygamy will become more and more acceptable as we move forward, unless something changes that I don't see. Sean.
So I have a situation where two ministers believe and teach this privately. And a lot of it comes into play, especially whenever they're doing overseas women. Because in certain cultures, it's permitted. And so this is not just secular. And it's not normal in the church, I have experienced this actually firsthand.
And there, and this is not going to surprise you, in my visits to Utah, there is a large group south of Utah, north Arizona, where polygamy is pretty much allowed. It's not necessarily lawful, but it's not enforced to be against the law. Those who would call themselves the fundamentalist Latter-day Saints practice polygamy. And then, like I say, the fact that now there are shows, more than one show on television that are promoting this polygamy, it is becoming more and more accepted in our society. So I think it's worthwhile to have that discussion. Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. So my understanding is they are not legally, per the U.S. law, allowed to marry multiple women. However, in their culture and in their society, they are seen as legally married to multiple wives. That's my understanding.
So I'm wondering, how can you track that? If it's not legal, and it's not...
My understanding is, basically, it's not being enforced. The idea that they just allow it. They're not causing problems, so the law basically just doesn't look at it. But it's interesting because it does seem more and more as it's accepted. And as it proliferates the media, I have to only believe that more and more people are going to... The show is wildly popular, and it's not the only one out there. But this man has at least four wives. Yeah. Billy.
Well, and I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but it also is multiple husbands and one wife.
Haven't seen that one.
So I've run across a couple of times.
Wow. That's a new one. Yeah, the whole idea of one man, one woman as a companion is definitely, we're moving away from that idea. And it's becoming more and more accepted to be whatever your arrangement is perfectly fine. And so we've seen, I don't know if I want to say I'm just a grumpy old man, but as I've gotten older, it seems that it's gotten worse, not better. And I don't imagine that it is going to get better. So, to sum up this lesson, the idea of companionship, the idea of woman being created She was designed to be with man. We talked about the fact that Eve, if you wanted to put a tag on it, was to Adam with love from the Creator. So, what are some things that could potentially impede the woman being the helper for the man? We talked about some of them. Does a woman view her number one priority to be her husband's helper? We talked about the fact that some women work outside the home, and that's okay, as long as it doesn't impact her number one priority. Is she her husband's helpmeet? If you're young and you may be newly married or not married yet, what is your viewpoint, man or woman, towards the marriage relationship? Is that what you view the reason to get married is for? Companionship. It's not just to have kids. It's not just to raise a family. That's not the purpose of the husband-wife relationship. The purpose of the relationship is to have a lifelong companion. I would imagine all of us could think of someone or some couple that have spent their entire time together, as long as their kids were at home, all of their energy was focused on their kids. Everything they did was for their kids. And then when the kids leave home, the husband and wife kind of look at each other and go, now what? just reminded me of a comment, and I'm not, I'll just tell you the comment. Luke told us at one point, I think when I leave home, you and Mama are going to have all the fun. I'm glad they think that. I'm glad they feel that way, because we've tried to foster that relationship that, hey, we love you boys, but we're perfectly fine being together, just the two of us. Final question for this sermon, or for this class. Do you, not focusing on your spouse, do you work to be the kind of spouse that your spouse would want to be with? Don't think about your husband or your wife. Think about yourself. Try to be self-aware. Self-awareness is probably the most difficult thing to do, is to be self-aware. I can tell you there are times that I probably am not the best person that I want to be with. I can be surly, I can have moments, I can have times where I'm probably not the best to deal with. Yet Jennifer has no choice, she's stuck with me. But are you working? Are you thinking about, hey, how can I make myself a person that my spouse wants to be with? Are you loud? Are you rude? Do you say things in public? Do you take care of yourself? I mean, this is a wide encompassing topic. But are you trying to make yourself a person that your spouse wants to be with? They're your companion. Okay. Any other comments before we move on to the next lesson? I would really encourage you to check the end of the lesson, the checklist. I don't know if you've been talking with your spouse with the questions that come at the end of each lesson. They will foster lively conversation, I would guess, if you look at those questions and talk to your spouse. If you're being honest with one another, I would guarantee there's going to be some interesting conversations that come out of that. Anything else before we move on? Kelly?
I want to say thank you for all your work on the class.
Thank you.
Non-condemned behavior, therefore accepted by God. I've talked a little bit about that. is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, because of fornication, let each man have his own wife, and let each wife have her own husband. So this is right back to what Jesus had said, right? It was the design for God to assign one man for one woman.
No, and that's an interesting comment, because while I have speculated that it has started to creep into our social consciousness, that just further affirms the idea. There are people out there that are starting to question and accept the idea of multiple partners as part of more into the mainstream. And personally, based on the way that our laws are written, I don't really see a huge impediment to it becoming legal. That may sound shocking, but I personally don't see this being a huge issue for people to start accepting, unfortunate as it may be. Okay, moving on, lesson 5. Authority in the husband-wife relationship, everyone's favorite topic. Who's the boss? Who's the boss? Should we even be saying who's the boss? Is that even the right way to approach that? But isn't that what we think of when we say authority? Genesis 3:16. To the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. Is that a popular idea in 2021? Go over in 1 Timothy chapter 2. Verse 14, and Adam was not deceived, but the woman being deceived fell into transgression. And we'll look at one more before we discuss over in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Verse 3, but I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ, the head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. Dropping down to verse 8, for man is not from woman, but woman from man, nor was man created for the woman, but woman for the man. For this reason, the woman ought to have a symbol of authority on her head because of the angels. These are really unpopular verses in today's society. Why was man given authority over the woman? Based on the verses we just read, why does man have authority over the woman? Woman came from man, number one. What's the other reason? She was deceived. She was deceived. So, let's talk about that for a minute. Why do you think people today, people you know outside the body, why do you think people believe men have the authority in the relationship? What are their reasons? Stronger. Culture. It's American society. We just have this culture that the men are the head of the family. Typically, they've been the one that brings home the money. They're the breadwinner. Do you believe most people think men have authority because of the reasons we just discussed? Or is it some other reason? Billy. We're moving in that direction, right? Where most people don't even think that the man has authority. I think you're probably right. That's not an idea that is really proliferated today. It's not even really discussed. So let's just get one thing out of the way. Leadership in marriage is not about who is the better leader. Can we agree on that? Do you think there are couples that would be better with the woman in charge? I could probably name a few. Don't answer that. We probably all know a couple that you would think the woman could probably lead better than the man. But that's not what this is about. That's not God's design plan. So let's just understand, leadership is not about who is the better leader. Leadership is about the fact that God assigned the husband the authority. Okay? So, where does the authority for man to lead come from? Kelly? It comes from God. So let's just talk some basics here for just a minute. Does God have authority over man? Why? He created him. God has inherent authority, right? He is our creator. So if God delegates authority, because all husbands are working off of delegated authority. It's not inherent in upon yourself that you have this authority. It was given to you. It was given to you by God. Look in Numbers chapter 16. I think most of us understand this idea, but I think it's good to look at it, a couple of examples to really drive home the idea. Number 16, do you remember Korah and his group had a problem with Moses and Aaron? What was their problem? Why do they have all the power? What made you so special? If you look in verse 3, they gathered together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, "You take too much upon yourselves, for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?" Why did Moses and Aaron have authority over the group? God gave it to them. It was delegated authority. And of course, we know how this turned out, right? Moses said, "The Lord is going to show you who has authority." And when Korah rebelled, was he rebelling against Moses and Aaron?
Yes.
But what was more important? Who he was rebelling against? He was rebelling against God. He was rebelling against God. So we understand what is a delegate? What's that word mean? It's a person acting for another. I've used this example before. If when they were younger, if I told Michael, "Hey, go tell Luke he needs to clean up his room." And Luke says, I'm not going to clean up my room." Who is he rebelling against? Me. Because Michael is my delegate. I'm telling him he has my authority to go say that, right? It's the same thing in this example with Moses, and it's the same with the husband. The husband has been given that authority by God. So in a husband-wife relationship, if the wife does not respect that authority, who is she rebelling against? God. We all understand that, right? When the people rejected Samuel as a judge, what did they want? They wanted a king. And I think we probably all remember, what did God tell Samuel? Because he said, "They've rebelled against me. They've rejected me." What did God tell Samuel? They didn't reject you. They did reject Samuel. Don't misunderstand. But more importantly, they've rejected me. Look over at Luke chapter 10. Verse 16, Jesus says, He who hears you hears me. He who rejects you rejects me, and he who rejects me rejects him who sent me. What's the context here? Who's he talking to? Do what? Goes all the way to the top. He's talking to the apostles, right? Because these apostles, what was their job going to be? To preach the word. They were going to go to all the world and preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. And Jesus says, if they reject you, they reject me. And if they reject me, they're rejecting the Father. So let's just understand that as unpopular in today's society as it may be, rejecting the idea of the husband having authority over the wife is to reject God the Father. So, with that in mind, and trust me, we're going to get to the men, so women, don't think you're being singled out. There's plenty of opportunity to go around. But let me just ask you a question. Wives, do you think it is a sin to reject or undermine your husband's authority? Is it a sin to you? Because that's what we're talking about. Is that a sin? Now, men, you were given this authority. You've been given delegated authority. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 15. Who appointed Saul king of Israel? God did, right? If you look in verses 17, so Samuel said, when you were little in your own eyes, were you not head of the tribes of Israel, and did not the Lord anoint you king over Israel? Now the Lord sent you on a mission and said, go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed. When God grants authority, what does he expect?
Obedience.
We're just going to use the phrase that Samuel used. He sent Saul on a mission. Husbands, do you have a mission? Do you look at it that way? This authority that's been given to you, is that a mission? When we talk about a missionary, what do we think of? Someone who travels for a specific reason, right? Usually that reason is to proclaim the gospel. They have a specific mission. Husbands, do you have a mission based on the delegated authority given to you? If you don't, you better find one. Because you do, whether you realize it or not. Rod.
So we practice this all the time. In politics, we send ambassadors. Ambassadors expected to understand the person that sent them and fall in line. And the moment they don't, they come home. I mean, and we don't balk at that idea at all, because that seems to make so much sense.
No, you're right. I think when we use the words like delegate and mission, we think of different things. We don't necessarily come to mind husband-wife relationship. But if we think it in the terms, we start to frame that relationship in terms of words that we use in other environments, it makes more sense. We start to get a better picture of what this delegated authority that men have been given looks like. Look over in Matthew chapter 20. Starting in verse 20. Then the mother of Zebedee's sons came to him with her sons, kneeling down and asking something from him. And he said to her, what do you wish? She said to him, grant that these two sons of mine may sit, one on your right hand and the other on the left, in your kingdom. But Jesus answered and said, you do not know what you ask. Are you able to drink the cup that I am about to drink and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? They said to him, we are able. So he said to them, "You will indeed drink my cup and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with, but to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it is prepared by my Father." And when the 10 heard it, they were greatly displeased with the two brothers. But Jesus called them to himself and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. Yet it shall not be so among you, but whoever desires to become great among you, let him be your servant. And whoever desires to be first among you, let him be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." Did Jesus have authority? What did he use that authority to do? How did he use that authority? To serve. To serve. So men, yeah, you've got the authority, right? How do you use it? How are you supposed to use it? Anytime God gives authority, who is it supposed to benefit? Those under that authority. It's not for the benefit of the person who has it. And Jesus even says, "What's the example I set for you? I served." So men, when you're making decisions because of this authority that has been delegated to you, are you using that authority to benefit yourself? Or are you using that to benefit your wife? Because that's the purpose, is to benefit your wife, not yourself. Have you ever been guilty of making decisions that benefit yourself at the cost of what the benefit would be to your wife? Billy. So what's the, you're absolutely right. So what's the big lie about women's liberation? That men, that women should be independent, that they should have authority. But here's the thing, what happens, you can make this application in many different environments outside of the husband-wife relationship. What happens when there is no authority? When no one's in charge? What is that word called?
Chaos.
Chaos. Somebody has to be in charge. And for the reasons we talked about earlier, the man has been given that authority. And when that authority doesn't exist or is not respected, what do you end up with? You end up with chaos. God made laws for man for what reason? Because he just wanted man to walk the line?
He knew what was best.
He loved him. He loved him. He loves mankind, and so he made laws. When you tell your child not to go play in the street, why are you doing that? Because you're a bad parent? You're just mean? What are you telling me what to do? What if I want to play in the street? No, you have those laws because you love them. And God gave us laws because he loves us. And that's the same reason that he put someone in charge, that being the man. Sean. He does.
So when he first created him, it wasn't that they were equal, and then she said, and it's like, oh, now you have to be under him. He had already created the order. And the reason I'm putting that, so that apparently the Greek in Timothy is she was like wholly deceived, like embarrassingly deceived. And a lot of the conversation around that is talking about it's not belittling male or female, but we all have certain kind of roles. He made mankind, male and female, the two make up mankind. Within that, they do have strengths. Some of those strengths can be weaknesses. A woman can be very tender, or patient, or calm in certain situations, but that can also turn into being naive. A man can be, hey, no, we need to get something done, but then they can bulldoze over people. Every culture, interestingly enough, falls into this pattern because they learn, like, this thing works, but I kid you not, Jordan and I had a study with a couple that came in and they were wanting to talk about marriage, not members of the church, and told us right off the bat, we are a 50-50 relationship. Long story short, we talked about God's plan and what that actually looks like, not a stereotype of what they've heard. And by the end of the night, this is no joke, the husband told me privately that his problem with the marriage is that she won't let him leave. And then she ended up saying later that same night that her number one issue is that he won't take the reins. And so, I mean, we do have roles. God made us to function a certain way. They work. He's not trying to hurt us.
Right. It's designed for our good. And that's a topic that we're going to discuss. And what I will leave you with, since we are a minute over, the husband-wife relationship is a reflection of another relationship. What relationship is that? Christ and the church. So maybe something to think about over the next week is, how did Jesus treat the church? And how does the church treat Jesus? And how does that reflect in your marriage? Thank you for your comments. Appreciate it.